Welcome to That Medic Podcast, your bi-weekly dose
of all things digital health, global health, and leadership.
My name is Success, a student at Cambridge University.
And I am Simmer, a student at Harvard University.
Join us as we chat with some top professionals in healthcare. Enjoy.
In this podcast, we spoke to Dr. Rebecca Phillipsborn, an associate professor of pediatrics at Emory University. We discussed how to best integrate advocacy in medical practice, the qualities that make an effective versus ineffective team player, and her work helping integrate climate change into the medical school curriculum at Emory. Today's show is perfect for anyone excited about medical education or just intrigued by climate change and doctors' responsibility to help protect the environment. So, without further ado, let's have a listen. Hi, Dr. Phillipsborn. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for taking the time out to speak with us. So we normally start the podcast by asking the question, why did you decide to study medicine?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here and chat with you. And it's a great question. My path to medicine was not a straight one. I was always interested in health and public health. And I thought I might do something with writing and public health. My first job after college was in a school where I was responsible for writing curriculum for third through fifth graders. But what attracted me to that job was that the school had a health and family services clinic in the school. So instead of children, this was in Harlem, Public School 241 at the time, Friends of the Family Academy. Instead of having children have to miss school when they had an asthma attack, which has a detriment to their learning, they could go get treated right there in the school setting. And I really learned how to take care of children. We need to think of the whole family, the whole environment. But as I was going through that year in that job, I realized that if I was going to do public health, I needed to know a lot more about economics. It's not something I really studied in college. And so I decided to apply for a job. That position in Harlem was a one-year fellowship position. So I decided to apply for a job at its conclusion doing healthcare consulting. So I did traditional healthcare management consulting for 2 years. And it was then that I said, you know, I think instead of working with doctors, with hospital systems, I want to actually be the one providing that patient care. So at that point, I hadn't really done a lot of clinical care work. I hadn't worked with patients. So I actually just gave my 2 weeks notice. You know, my friends were applying to business school. For me, that was just not the right path. It worked for them, but it wasn't for me. So I gave my 2 weeks notice. I went home. I am originally from Alabama. I got my EMT license, which at that point in time, you could do in 6 weeks. I worked in emergency rooms as an EMT and then with local fire departments and got to actually do that patient care. And while I was doing that, I worked in a genetics lab with John Hartman. Back then, he was looking at how yeast cells buffer against environmental perturbations, which is this little microcosm of what ended up becoming a focus for the rest of my career. But those two experiences, doing EMT training, actually working with patients, and then seeing the possibility of research into environment genetics and how we think about environmental systems and their resilience are really what drove my path for the rest of my career towards medicine and environmental health.
No, I think that's really wonderful. And it really highlights that there are so many different diverse paths into medicine. And it can often be winding. It can also be sort of straight shot, but I think there's no wrong way to go about it. You know, I want to ask you a little bit more about that interest in environmental health, because I know it's been a focus of your career. I'm curious, how did that interest emerge?
Yeah, that time in Alabama was really formative. I had taken this really kind of dramatic step. I had been living in New York and I left pretty suddenly. So I was down in Alabama doing these two jobs, my EMT training and working in this genetic lab. And I read everything I could think of at that time. I was really trying to regroup and rethink. And one of my questions I was asking myself is, what is a big challenge? What is a challenge that I can spend the rest of my life focusing on, the rest of my career focusing on? And even back then, after reading and thinking, what emerged was the way that environmental degradation affects human health. And I decided then that that was what I wanted to focus on. I wasn't sure exactly what form that would take. I thought maybe it was going to be around disease emergence. the way environmental degradation affects maternal and child health and nutrition. These were some ideas I had. So I wasn't exactly sure what that trajectory would look like, but I knew that that topic was the one I wanted to focus on. So I decided while I was getting, I still had to finish some post-baccalaureate requirements to even apply to med school. And while I was doing some of my post-bac work, I applied to a master's in environmental science and policy.
No, that's really wonderful. I know that you did that master's in environmental science and policy, and also spent a year working for the World Food Program in Senegal. So I'm curious if you can tell me a little bit about these both experiences and how they were formative for you as this, as you're emerging as this first year medical student and thinking about climate science, global health.
Yeah, great question. I absolutely loved my environmental science and policy program. When I matriculated to the environmental science and policy program at Columbia, at the School of International and Public Affairs, we were the third year of the program. So it was still pretty new. There were still a lot of systems being sorted out there, which gave us a lot of flexibility. So I had let them know, hey, I want to be a doctor. I want to come to this program and then I'm going to apply to medical school. Is that okay? Can I take classes at the School of Public Health and have some flexibility in how I go through the program? They said yes. And what I loved the most about the program, I think, is the people. So there was a system set up for interdisciplinary collaboration. Each person in the program brought their lens of either what they'd already done in their career so far or where they saw themselves going. And we were all planning on different careers. So it really had this kind of workshop focus, interdisciplinary lens. How do we work together to solve problems and with community organizations too? And through that, through the workshop process, I met two incredible mentors. One was Bob Cook, who introduced me to the concept of One Health. He was at the time the chief veterinarian of the Bronx Zoo and has had just an incredible career working at that One Health nexus. And then Kathy Callahan, who had worked at EPA as well. And those two were my workshop mentors who kind of led us through these questions. How do you bring a team together to solve problems at the environment health interface? So two of my workshop questions are around avian influenza emergence, which became very relevant again recently. And then looking at sustainable funding for a South Bronx Greenway. People, environment, systems, health, community, equity, these were all principles embraced by the program. And I really, really enjoyed my time there.
No, that's really wonderful. And I know that after you had these sort of formative experiences, you went on to medical school at Emory, completed your residency in pediatrics at Emory, and are now, of course, an attending at Emory. So I'm curious that while you were a student and trainee, how did you nurture these interests? Because I know that medical school and residency can be pretty strenuous and time consuming.
Absolutely. And I realize I forgot to mention the World Food Program year in between. So while I was applying to med school, I actually applied from Senegal, where I was working in maternal and child health and nutrition at the World Food Program Regional Bureau. Again, a place that brought together really wonderful mentors and colleagues. And while there, I served as one of the mentors for a group of Columbia students from my alma mater on their workshop project. So the World Food Program was their client, and their project was looking at the ways that climate change affects food security and nutrition in our region, the Sahel region. So they did kind of the first assessment and report of that in the Sahel region. Well, that was just one of the projects I worked on while I was there, with most of my work focused on infant and young child feeding in those first formative 2 years of life. And it really shaped my kind of launch pad into this topic, into medical school, and then thinking about how it can be part of not just the work that we do, but how we educate our learners. And so in medical school and residency, you're right, there's so much to learn. And I think all of us still have that reason that drove us to medicine in the first place that it's important to hold on to. And it's the anatomy, the pathophysiology. What is it that actually made you want to be a doctor? What is it that brought you here? And kind of remember, to the extent that you can, to keep your eye on those things and make sure that you're making some time for them, because they're what really nurtures our soul. That's what drives us to continue to want to do this good work, and I think can help us prevent burnout too. And so even in residency, in med school, Emory has time for a discovery phase. So I worked with Karen Levy looking at climatic drivers of diarrheagenic E. coli, the way that temperature and rainfall in essence affect diarrheagenic E. coli incidents. And she has continued to be a mentor to this day. Then in residency, I looked for similar projects, something I could do around One Health, thinking really about the ways that environment on a global health level, we need to think about community, biodiversity, health, and livelihoods all together. I met Andy Shane, who is now the Division Director for Infectious Disease at Emory, and she's also been a lifelong mentor. And she had a project in Rwanda that I helped support around Volcanoes National Park and in collaboration with the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund International. So we kind of brought all those principles together and looked at how we can support health delivery in that area around the park with consideration of livelihoods and One Health too. And then also in residency, another just really formative experience that led me to an incredible person who's continued to be a mentor was my continuity clinic. We have a half day of clinic every week. And the first 2 years were in our Emory Children's Health Care Atlanta based clinic. But the last year, you're elsewhere, you're out in the community. My clinic was in Immigrant and Refugee Health Clinic with Dr. Susan Reines. And that was where I started really thinking about not just how climate change affects children, but how climate change affects immigrant and refugee children. Thinking about climate change as a human rights concern, building upon my global health work, but seeing how that really can be so critical locally in our communities right here in Atlanta. So I know that's a lot, but I think I want to, it's amazing to reflect on the incredible mentorship I've had here at Emory and how important those mentor and mentee relationships have been.
No, certainly. I think mentorship is the cornerstone of just going through academic medicine. And it's great to hear that, you had such a rich array of experiences in medical school, in your residency as well. I want to pick up on something you mentioned, how climate change is relevant to your patient population. As a pediatrician, I'm curious if you could speak a little bit about that and why you feel a special need to talk about and work in this climate change environmental science space, given that your patients are really this next generation.
Yeah, and I think climate change matters for everyone, but you're right, it absolutely matters for children from every lens. So we can think about the question of human rights and intergenerational justice too. So the world that we're literally leaving our children. I get to think about that as a pediatrician and part of my day-to-day life. We know that children are more vulnerable to many of the impacts of climate change because they're still growing and developing and because they depend on us. They depend on their caregivers and communities to buffer them, to protect them from climate-driven exposures. There's a really important UNICEF report that came out about almost 2 years ago now, looking at the way that every child on Earth, nearly greater than 99% of the world's children, are at risk from climate-driven disaster. So this is not just a global health problem. This is very much a problem everywhere. And it's something that we can interface with right there in our clinical encounters to make sure that children are prepared for those challenges that are actually at this point inevitable while we're trying to reduce the scope of the challenges that they will face in the future by mitigating emissions.
No, certainly. And I think what's really interesting about your career is that you are, of course, focusing on climate change in your clinical practice, but also within the realm of education. I know that in 2020, you taught an elective course at Emory called Climate Crisis and Clinical Medicine. And that's been sort of the part of the impetus behind a broader integration of climate and health into Emory's medical school curriculum over these past few years. I was wondering if you could tell us the story behind how you and, importantly, your students work to incorporate climate change into your curriculum, because I know that there's always too much to teach in medical school and changing the status quo can be hard.
Yeah, I love this question because it gives me a chance to talk about my students who are incredible and amazing and have been my allies and my colleagues in this space. And the only challenge is I won't be able to do them justice. But really, even that climate crisis in clinical medicine elective, which was, we built it early days of the pandemic when our students were pulled from their clinical rotations and didn't actually have work to do. We needed to create work for them to do because there were all of a sudden no clinical rotations. But even the start of that comes down to my students. So two students, Ben Rabin and Emmeline Laney, who are now both up at, in Boston with you all at Brigham and Women's for internal medicine residency, they reached out to me their M1 year and they said, what do you think about this idea? What do you think about this idea of putting climate change in our Emory Medical School curriculum? We think this is a big problem. This is something that is in the media and that we've learned about previously as one of the biggest risks for human health, and yet it's completely absent in our curriculum. So that's kind of in a nutshell what their perspective was, paraphrasing their words. And we decided that, yeah, let's see what we can do about this. And so we worked together even before the climate crisis and clinical medicine elective. We've been working for over a year at that point and pitching our idea to the school, honing and refining ways that this could go forward. And the partnership, part of what made it wonderful is they were living the curriculum. They saw the opportunity in a way that I never would have remembered from my own time as an M1, M2, or if things had evolved, I would have never been able to see. So they actually saw where those opportunities were, and they understood that it was going to need to be strategic, that this couldn't be a separate additional add-on, but it was going to need to be integrated into what we already teach, kind of updating what we teach with the evidence base that has evolved around how climate change affects health. And so when they found out that they weren't going to be able to continue on their third year rotations, the day they found that out, we just happened to have a call scheduled already. And I was kind of listening to their story and said, well, let me see if I can create an elective. And so we did. And they were part of that first elective with a group of other students here at Emory. We opened the recordings up to students across the country. And like most of my philosophy for education, even the activities in the elective were quite co-created. So students had a big role in choosing which activities they wanted to do and which projects they wanted to participate in as we formed the curriculum. And it was wonderful. Since then, we've just continued to get more students engaged at Emory and continue to build that curriculum in partnership, students and faculty working together from the climate group and then engaging faculty from each of the courses that already exist to make this happen.
No, that's so wonderful. And I think I want to hone in on something you mentioned at the start of your answer about sort of your students being your colleagues and sort of these trusted collaborators. I mean, I think this is such a wonderful example of sort of collaboration in medicine. And, you know, I'm curious if you could reflect across this experience, across sort of the other experiences you've had with your other mentors, and share a little bit about what you think makes an effective versus ineffective team player.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think there's probably more than one right answer. When I look back at our little group and making this curriculum a reality, there was a lot of trust. There was a trust that we had the same end goal in mind, even when we weren't sure exactly what the best next step was. I think Ben and Emmeline are incredible communicators, both of them. They are, and by that I mean they listen very well, and they're really great at articulating kind of their vision and ideas. So this was all done very respectfully in collaboration with the School of Medicine. I think really the trust piece is the foundation, though, just having that trust in each other, when to know that everyone's working to that same goal to move things forward. I think trust is essential for having folks who are team players.
No, wonderful. And, you know, I think this example of sort of incorporating sort of climate science into Emory's medical school curriculum speaks about a broader trend where medical institutions are increasingly realizing that climate change isn't just transforming our environment and weather, but it's also impacting our health. You know, I mean, plenty of people are apathetic or perhaps even cynical. And I want to ask you then, why do you think medical students and doctors should just care about climate change, frankly speaking?
Yeah, I think we have to care about it because it affects our patients. And what we do in our role is we care for patients. And so climate change is affecting health right now. For folks who need like a little bit more parameters around why they should care, actually back in 1995, the National Academy of Science, Engineering and Medicine released a report around the importance of incorporating environmental health into medical education. That was 1995. And I think climate change has become this urgent hook for this not new question of how do we do this? We know that, and that report emphasized that the environment is one of the biggest drivers of human health. Do we consider that enough in the way that we approach medicine from treatment, making sure our treatment plans can be carried out to the huge work of preventing disease in the first place? So I think for those who are skeptics, I'd say, hey, this is going to affect your patients. And even if you don't care about it in the big picture, I think you need to care about it because it affects the health of that patient right there in front of you. I think you need to know the ways to tell that patient, hey, this is how you can protect yourself from those implications of climate change that unfortunately we know are at this point inevitable, and how you can adapt your differential diagnosis to these emerging threats that we're seeing from climate change that may be more likely than they otherwise would have been.
No, that's really helpful. And I think it speaks then to a question of responsibility and question of what should doctors do beyond sort of the four walls of their clinic or their hospital. I think that's a question that's on a lot of people's minds, because on one hand, you have these doctors who are these trusted professionals, and recognizing that health intersects with almost every facet of society, so their voice means something. But on the other hand, some people are worried that doctors might be seen as political, that this might distract from their core clinical work. So I'm curious, that how do you personally think advocacy should intersect with medicine?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think the answer may be different for all of our learners, but I do challenge when I get some one-on-one time with our second years in their community rotation, I challenge them to be intentional about what they think the role advocacy should play in their career will be, because it can be different for everyone, but I do think we need that intentional space to consider it. And the truth is, we're advocates all the time. I may be advocating within my own system to get a patient on my schedule who has complex healthcare needs that I need to see at a certain time and need someone to help me move things around and make space for them. I may be advocating to an insurance company for a prior authorization for a medicine that I need to get approved. So advocating for our patients comes quite naturally to us. I think it's just about the scope and scale of that advocacy. And for pediatrics now, advocacy is included in our residency requirements. Pediatricians have a great history of changing laws to better support and protect children. Their voices aren't always at the table. They can't vote yet. So we need to help there and be there to represent them. I think within our systems, there's going to be a huge opportunity for all of us to advocate for more sustainable healthcare delivery, right? Per the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, we know that we have to reduce emissions 45% below 2010 levels by 2030, and we need a net zero planet by 2050. That includes healthcare. So we know that we need to reduce emissions in healthcare. We're still quite far away from that in some cases. So how can we as physicians be part of that change, find those synergies between other principles in healthcare, like value-based care for our patients, like those health benefits of climate action, things that are healthier for our patients anyway and improve their health anyway? How can we be part of that transformation even, I think, to enhance disease prevention and health promotion, right? That takes less energy and is better for our patients anyway if we can prevent them from getting those diseases. And there's a huge environmental health component to all of that. So I think there's that opportunities for advocacy abound. You'll find yourself advocating for your patients no matter what, and just kind of be intentional about what role you'd like that to play.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate that note that, I mean, doctors already engage in advocacy. It's a question really of scope and scale. And also sort of what you were saying about, as a pediatrician, your role, I think it really speaks to the core function of advocacy, giving voice to those who might not have it, or their voice might not be heard or empowered. So I think those are really important points, and thank you for that. And I think That's such a wonderful note to ask you my final question, which is a question we ask all our guests. But I wanted to ask you for your three pieces of advice for students who are interested in a career pathway like yours.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. And thank you so much again for the opportunity to be here. I think through this conversation, I have been beaming with the chance to think about those mentors who are so instrumental in supporting me in every way through my career path. And so I think advice number one is find those people who make you better and keep them close. I think that is so important. And then as we've been talking and thinking about the systems that need change, how we need to improve health and health equity, how transformation of systems needs to happen, I think often those big ideas can seem daunting when you're in a training position and you're entering a system that's different than the one that you can imagine. But I have told our students and residents before, when you're talking to people, when you're asking for help or seeing if there's a good mentor-mentee relationship, don't be afraid to lead with those transformative ideas. Don't be afraid to lead with your dreams, because someone may not be willing to help you, but then you'll find another person. If you don't tell them what you're actually hoping for, of course they can't help you because they don't know what your dreams are. So don't be afraid to lead with your dreams. And then I think the third piece, which no one needs telling, but is so important, and I need reminding of this every single day, is time is really our greatest resource. And so remember that value of time and make sure at the end of the day that you're spending it on something that you believe in, even as you're, of course, needing to get through those requirements of med school and get into the residency program that you dream of. Make sure that you're spending that time and investing it in the way that you want to, because it is your most valuable resource.
Well, it goes back to a point you were making earlier about having your guiding light and why you went into medicine and making sure you keep that part of your career across every part of it. So what a wonderful note to end on. Thank you so much, Dr. Phillips Warren. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you again.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Make sure to subscribe, rate us, and leave a review. You can also head to the description of this podcast to follow us on all social media so that you don't miss out on any of our content.